Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
Hello, LibriPlanet. Hello.
Hi, LibriPlanet.
Hello.
This is Mike Stenta and...
I guess the Jamie Brady Garing. Bunch style. This is Don Blair. Oh, sorry. And that's...
Oh.
we decided to pre-record our talk for this session because there's been a lot of rapidly changing plans leading up to it. We were not able to attend in person for various reasons, number one of which being that the in-person gathering was canceled. But we're optimistic that this will work out well anyways and could actually jive with some of the things that we were going to hope to talk about with all of you in person. So we're going to give this a shot and try it as kind of a panel discussion where we're just going to prompt each other because it's pre-recorded. But also, you know, we'll be in the IRC room during when this is being played. So if you have questions and want to shoot them to us there, we'll try to answer them, you know, either in IRC or maybe we, if it works out, we can have a Q&A at the end of this video or something like that. So yeah, hopefully this works out. Hopefully it's playing. Welcome everyone to our talk. And our talk is titled Stewarding Technological Freedom in Agriculture. So that's what we're talking about. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves first?
I'm Jamie Garing. I work with Mike on a free software system called FarmOS, which provides record keeping and farm management tools for farmers. I have a history, actually, before I was a software developer, working with farmers both on farms and a long period with a nonprofit that runs New York City's farmers markets. So I've come to software in general and free software with the sort of experience of seeing how ways in which farmers are still in many ways tenant farmers of sort of the larger agricultural industry and the food industry, and see that there are many vectors for change within free software to try to provide farmers with more ownership of the data that they produce, and ultimately greater power over their the value that they're producing with the food that they produce, so they can keep more of that value themselves.
Don, would you like to go next?
Sure. I'm Don Blair. My original background is in physics, and that's where I was sort of first exposed to these issues around free and open source software, where it just seemed kind of irrational in that context for people to be using proprietary devices that locked them out of being able to modify them or understand how they worked. It's unscientific, because you really need to know the details in many cases if you're going to compare apples to apples with respect to these instruments. And because that was all happening out in Western Mass, where there's a lot of farming, I got interested in farming out there and seeing what sorts of applications these technologies could have in the realm of farming, and got connected to FarmHack, an interesting organization that takes this free and open source approach to farm technology. And then through that organization and other machinations, met up with you folks, and it's been really exciting to collaborate with you on the kinds of projects that you're working on, and I'm kind of getting a lot more insight into the actual applications on the ground. And then recently, I've actually been deploying systems with farmers to do basic things like monitoring soil temperature or greenhouse temperature, soil moisture, and working on the architecture of those systems such that they're as open and reconfigurable and easy to modify and repair as possible. So that's sort of where I'm at.
Cool. And my name is Mike Stenta. I'm working on a software, free and open source software project called FarmOS with Jamie. Like Jamie said, it's mainly for farm record keeping. But it really has a strong focus on ownership. So not only ownership of the code, but ownership of the data that farmers are putting into it. This is kind of an issue that's coming up a lot in the ag industry, in the big ag industry now, around data ownership. And a lot of farmers use large equipment, especially on the large farms, that has proprietary software running a lot of the operation and streaming that data into the proprietary systems that are on another server and are used for aggregation and for decision making. So these are features that help the farmer, but at the same time, they're losing a lot of that ownership over those processes. I think what we're really trying to do is get some of that back using free and open source software, and helping to develop a community around this idea of ag technological sovereignty, so that farmers have more of a choice in all of that. And I think one of the points we'll probably make in this discussion is that this isn't really a new idea at all. That agriculture is one of the oldest industries of mankind. It's what produces the food that we all eat. So it's inescapable. It is necessary. And there's a lot of different ways that it's manifested throughout our history too. So, a lot of the intellectual property issues that we're seeing now are very new issues. And a lot of them are kind of being created out of the systems that we're in now, which are not the same way that they've been done for centuries. And there's costs and benefits there too. So hopefully we can kind of touch on some of those points as we get into this. I think, a lot of what this talk is going to be is about ownership in general, and the lack thereof, perhaps.
Right. I made a quick list, or I think we collaboratively made a list, and I just jotted some of these ideas down of issues that are relevant to what you were just talking about. So maybe I could just read those off really quickly, and then as a spur for discussion. So challenges around intellectual property, vendor lock-in, lack of data portability, blocks to collaboration and sharing of knowledge, lack of interoperability. There's this mode of business now that people are referring to as surveillance capitalism. We could talk about how that manifests in agriculture. There's the inability to repair your hardware due to legal restrictions that led to this right to repair movement. And then there's just basic design issues where people are sort of obfuscating the underlying design and how it works in order to, you know, keep the user kind of under their control in a way. And then something that I think we're all trying to address in what we're working on is this architecture that requires connecting to a centralized online service for credentialing or for just accessing your data and the issues that brings up in general, and then specifically for people who have intermittent connectivity. And then, you know, a sort of unnecessary encryption of data where you're actually not concerned about privacy. It's encrypted so that you're unable to access the data easily, and you have to go through the company that's offering you a service in order to get the unencrypted version. So I guess that's, you know, hardware, data, software, different architectures around centralization, decentralization. So just with that as a prompt, how might those issues have manifested recently in your own work? It might be a way to continue chatting about this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people attending this conference are probably, you know, follow a lot of the news with the right to repair movement and with you know, free software ideas in general. But if you're not, there have been a number of high profile cases recently directly related to agriculture, primarily around tractors and the software that's used on those tractors. And I guess without calling out specific companies by name, it's been an interesting process, I think, because there's I guess just to set the stage for anyone who's not familiar, modern day tractors are very complicated. There's a lot going on, and the software is kind of necessary for some of these very very complicated systems to make everything work. That, and they also include a lot of really neat gadgets like sensors that are measuring things in the soil as the tractor is moving over it. And you know, lots of metrics coming in about you know, yields and moisture content and all kinds of metrics are streaming through this system that's moving across the ground. And you know, I think there's generally speaking arguments for and against large ag in general, but this is what's happening now. So that, with that in mind, when a tractor is experiencing issues, oftentimes it, you know, the diagnosis for that is by plugging into the OBD port or the ISO port on it and reading data from the system there, to just like you do with your car. Unfortunately, with a lot of the large ag companies, that data is proprietary. So the actual pins that are used and the format of the data that's coming over those pins is, you're not legally allowed to share that information. You're not legally allowed to understand how it works. Some people are kind of, you know, reverse engineering that to figure out what that is. But technically that's against the law in some cases. So, where that becomes an issue is, you know, if you've got a tractor that's $800,000, do you own that, or is it owned by the company that you bought it from to some extent? Because the agreement that you sign for the software, which runs everything on it, and is like, without it, it's basically a brick, a very, very large, heavy metal brick. you know, who owns that? Who owns it at that point? You know, a lot of the requirements are that you have to bring it to the dealership in order to have any work done. And for many people, that means trucking it a long distance from where they actually are. So the ability to have, you know, your local mechanic come out and fix it for you is removed entirely. And this is how it, or for the farmer themselves to fix it, is no longer an option. And that is how it's worked for, you know, that was the standard. You as a farmer are a problem solver. You have a welder, you know, typically you have all the tools you need to fix mechanical issues yourself. Software issues are a new layer. And, you know, while we have met and talked with a lot of farmers who are software engineers as well, or who dabble in that world, for most, it's not, you know, for most, it's just an alien language. And so it adds this dependency to the system on the company that you bought it from, which is very problematic, I think, as these things scale out. So, you know, one thing that I've seen is there's a story on Motherboard about some Ukrainian software engineers who developed their own operating system for the tractor, and now a lot of farmers in the United States are basically loading that firmware into their tractors so that they have that freedom again. Now that's not, you know, they're not allowed to do that, but it's a way to take back some of that freedom. That's one of the big things that's been in the news recently regarding ag and free software, I think.
Yeah, that's great. And then Ginny, you've had specific experiences in farming that have led you to both be interested in the data management side of things. I think you've talked about like observing particular workflows and seeing what kind of value people get from data. And I think you've developed like a sort of strong perspective around how these technologies can be beneficial in those contexts, and how they best be designed in order to accomplish the goals of the farmer.
Yeah, pardon me. Yeah, well, the some of the instances that Mike referenced, where, you know, where the firmware was under proprietary license, which disallowed the farmers from accessing their data and all. One of the big outcomes of that is that they surrender their right to repair their own machinery. And, you know, obviously that is partly the reason for that is that, you know, the makers of that software and the hardware want to be able to, you know, determine who has a license to repair it, so that they can, you know, make money off of those costs. But another issue that's come up in that same, in some of those same instances is, you know, what is actually happening to the data that is being collected when that happens. And in many instances, it's the tractor manufacturer is ultimately just a broker for that data. And they typically have exclusive contracts with large seed companies like Monsanto and Bayer, who then get to use that seed data to make decisions on the futures markets and the commodities markets. And so they're directly able to influence the prices that farmers are getting for, you know, for the food that they produce, sometimes to the disadvantage of the same farmer, which is, when you think about it, a really vicious cycle, that this farmer is producing this data themselves through their own labor and sweat of their brow, and then that that data is being basically weaponized against them to devalue that labor. You know, so one of the things that I like to think about with farm data, the sort of the metaphor I like to look at it through is thinking of data as you know, value added to the product, which is something that I think a lot of farmers, especially You know, vegetable farmers who, you know, or market garden farmers are increasingly aware of that concept of adding value as business people. And so really conceptualizing data as a value source, you know, from the point of production. You know, because I think, you know, one of the ways that that the industry is able to essentially, you know, steal this data from farmers, you know, without any real, you know, without any serious protest about it, is that, you know, they kind of hide the way in which that they're stealing it. They don't make it known to the farmer, you know, exactly what they're producing when they produce it. So I think having a sense of like, this is, you know, this is your data and you're producing it when you are, you know, running your tractor over the field, you know, you have this data, to have like full transparency over that. So that farmers like over time become more aware of those issues and concerns. You know, I think there was, I think Mike, you know better about the issue. I'm going to call him out. I'm going to Tillable.
Oh yeah.
I think you followed that more closely. I don't know if I know all the details of how that worked, but that was a similar kind of situation.
Yeah, there was a situation recently where a company, and you know, it did ultimately come out that the data was not being sold to them. But what it revealed was, well, so what happened was a lot of farmers rent land from landlords. And they do something called a crop share or other arrangements where they split the cost of the inputs and things like that, and then they split the what they reap, what they harvest off of it. So that becomes part of the rental agreement. And in other cases, it's just a normal rental agreement too. But what happened recently is a whole bunch of landlords got these postcards in the mail from a company that was that's a startup, venture-backed startup, essentially saying, hey, you know, we think you could make a little bit more on your land. Your land is worth more. The ag Twitter sphere blew up at this. And I think this is really the bigger point here, is that farmers are very in tune to the fact that exploitation is and has been happening for a long time. So whether or not it was actually, you know, a case in this specific scenario, people got really upset, and like, this was like a nightmare for that company from a social media perspective. They got taken to task over this idea that they were using farm data to determine the value of land and therefore work as a middleman with the landlords to increase the rent on that land. So these kind of models, you know, are kind of just a continuation of the same exploitation that's been happening for a long time for farmers. There's a great, I wanted to pull this up because it made me think of it too, but there's a famous quote by Thomas Jefferson that says, "The farmer is the only man in our economy who buys everything at retail, sells everything at wholesale, and pays freight both ways." I feel like that quote still rings true, and even more so today, especially as we're seeing a lot of these, you know, large, well-funded companies come into the ag space and try to disrupt things. And disruption is not all, you know, disruption can be good in certain scenarios and in certain cases. In other cases, it can be very bad because you're bringing a lot of capital to a place that A, is probably not going to give you that kind of, you know, the kind of return that you're looking for as a venture company. But also you're essentially disrupting all these low margin other businesses that are around in that sphere. So such that, you know, you end up killing a whole bunch of the industry, and then you die yourself because you can't make the profit that you needed. So you just it's kind of like a scorched earth tactic in some ways. I mean, not always, but that's something that I have a problem with.
One thing I'll just say quickly that I take from what you both were just describing is both from Jamie, this pointing to, again, this almost surveillance capitalism model that people have talked about a lot recently, where the particular economic structures and incentives and the basic business model that a lot of these big tech companies broadly, you know, we were talking about Google and Facebook and others as well, that a lot of folks at Libre Planet will be familiar with, those dynamics are happening with farmers, with their farm data. But one of the really interesting things, I think, for folks at Libre Planet to hear about is how, when it came to Ag Twitter and this particular incident, the farmers really kind of got savvy to that very quickly, in ways that maybe it's not as easy to perceive with these more general surveillance capitalism models. You know, in general, you just sort of say, "Oh, I've got free email, cool," and you don't sort of think about like how is that actually working, and it just doesn't come up. But there are a bunch of ways in which the farming context for me for a while now has been a really neat way to a really neat place to be working out these alternative approaches, because farmers are have a different relationship with technology than maybe your average person does.
And farmers are super smart. Like it's such a bad stereotype to think of like the dumb farmer out in the, you know, flyover country or whatever. They're people are smart. You know, they know they have to be. And like not only with like the, you know, fact where they are in the market and the, you know, the lifestyle that they're living and the exploitation and thin margins and things, but also just in technology itself. I mean, you know, a farmer has to be everything. They have to be a mechanic. They have to be a plumber. They have to be an electrician. They have to be an agriculturalist. I mean, or a agronomist. They have to be so many of these things. And, you
electrician,
know, like,
mechanic. Yeah.
They're the HR. Original hackers, you know, they're the original problem solvers because they have to be. It's the act of cultivating the earth to produce food is a very complicated activity. There's a lot of problems all the time: insects, weather, drought, mechanical breakdowns, you know, germination rate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That you have to be. So you have to be really, smart. You have to be really crafty. And that's why, like, I'm just thrilled to be working on some of these things and working with a lot of the people that we've been working with on this, because I think we're very like-minded in many ways. And I think, you know, a lot of people who aren't directly involved with some of these ag processes would be surprised at how much we all can relate.
Absolutely. Jamie, if you have anything to add there, one of the prompts I could also offer is how the issues that we're talking about how they merge in the particular projects that you're working on right now, and how you sort of, maybe in this final stretch of the talk, what projects are you working on right now that relate to those issues, I guess?
Right. Well, you know, I think when you get down to the, you know, the real issues and the real problem set that farmers face when it comes to software issues and data issues, you know, is ultimately down to data capture, you know, because there's just, you know, in so many other industries, you already have so much technology integrated, you know, that captures, you know, in a factory floor, you know, like what's going on. You know, whereas in a farm, you know, there's a lot of free variables that just don't get captured. So, you know, and to be able to do that, you know, you have to go into the field with the farmer, to, create systems that can either do that with sensors, or my own work is primarily creating front-end applications that for manual data entry, but you know, trying to make that as resilient as possible has to be capable of working offline without, you know, without connection to a server. It has to have certain just like usability aspects to it, in terms of, you know, like you have to consider that, you know, farmers are going to be working in bright sun or pouring rain, and you know, they'll have gloves on, or they'll have mud caked on their fingers, and you know, can't always use a typical smartphone the way you know, the way we always as developers envisioned they're going to be using it when we're creating these systems. You know, so just you know, creating high contrast displays, and trying to limit the amount of extra work that data capture represents, so that they can still just get down to the work that they need to perform. Is, you know, that's a big aspect of what I do day to day. But it's, you know, but we're a small team, and so we're trying to do, we're ourselves trying to wear a lot of different hats, you know, being, you know, a programmer, but also trying to understand usability and user experience issues, and design issues, you know, because we're competing in some senses against other industries that don't take a free software approach, don't take the farmer's privacy and data ownership rights into account. So it's kind of an uphill battle in that sense, which Mike can probably speak to as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we just talked a bunch, but didn't really talk much about what we are working on. So I mean, PharmOS is, maybe I'll just give a quick spiel on that. PharmOS is basically a server, a web application that you install on a web server. It's built on Drupal. It's a distribution of Drupal. So you set that up on your web server, you access it and use it to manage your records. You can draw out the map of your farm, you can record all of your plantings, you can put in all of your animals and your equipment, and then record activities and logs associated with that, along with planning processes, so you can plan things in advance. We also have some basic sensor integrations, so you can set up, and I'm going to tee you up in a minute, so you can set up some, you know, DIY hardware out in the field or in a greenhouse or in a root cellar that's streaming data to PharmOS to help make decisions. So you can kind of keep all of that in one place as a dashboard. Some of the problems that is trying to address is first and foremost data ownership. So anyone can set this instance up themselves. They can own the database themselves, but then also providing abilities to share data with researchers and with agronomists and all the other people that farmers normally do share their information with, but it's their choice. It's an opt-in process where they can decide who gets access. There's different levels of controls and roles and permissions to provide that. And then, you know, the other challenge, which Jamie is working on a lot, is the offline mode. So, you know, a lot of farmers don't have access to the internet out remotely in the field, but they still need to be able to collect those records. And data collection time is the most limited resource of farmers. And so, you know, making that process as easy as possible and allowing it to work offline is really important. So that's what FieldKit, the companion app that Jamie is working on, is for. But I think like a great demonstration of where of the what the various different problem sets encountered in data collection in ag have to do with the hardware side and the sensor collection side that Don's been working on with the Quahog device and other things. So Don, you should talk about some of those challenges, you know, the different.
Sure.
Yeah, so I've no, that's great. So I've been working on the hardware side a bunch, trying to make free and open source hardware as an alternative to some of the proprietary systems that are out there for monitoring soil moisture and soil temperature. In a lot of cases, it's really just capturing data from existing sensors and trying to make sure that the data flow is as open as possible and reconfigurable. And yeah, the specific challenges that you've already referenced around data connectivity, because a lot of these business models are around renting the data back to the farmer. They require that you connect to the central server and be connected all the time. And a lot of the farmers who are becoming increasingly hip to the fact that that's not a design that is coming out of their consideration of their best interests, but about this particular business model, want to see if there are ways that they can capture that data locally first, and then if they have intermittent connectivity, and then put that online in the cloud to services like PharmOS, which you could also run locally, which is also a really cool option. It just, as you say, have total control over where the data goes. And another thing that that Jamie mentioned that I think we've all been pretty excited about are these emerging peer-to-peer technologies around sharing data in a relatively much more decentralized way. So the DAT project and a lot of the projects in that ecosystem are things that we've all been experimenting with, and I've been particularly excited about. I guess the other point to mention to connect this with other interests that are out there in the audience, perhaps at Libre Planet, is that a lot of the issues that we're talking about, again, are faced broadly in society in various ways, particularly those around connectivity and usability, like Jamie mentioned, where you're in a context where maybe your hands are wet and cold, and swiping on a phone is not particularly easy. Those are all challenges that are increasingly emerging in the context of climate resilience and disaster response. So Edge Collective, this sort of recently made up organization that it consists of, I think essentially just us, whether you're card carrying member or not, you may already be a member of Edge Collective, that's been the focus of that organization, looking at those overlaps in rural farming and disaster preparedness and climate induced scenarios. So that's been a kind of exciting Venn diagram overlap to be thinking about.
I think one other thought that just came out of like listening to Mike again, and just hearing how important the sort of opt-in aspect of data sharing. I think a lot of what this comes down to ultimately is bargaining power, just bargaining power for farmers to be able to come from a stance where they can negotiate strongly for prices and for ultimately the value of what they're producing, because they are working in oftentimes they're going to be on the frontier of the climate crisis, basically, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be most susceptible to that and facing a lot of challenges in the coming decades. So for them to still have some bargaining power and not just be relegated to being a form of tenant farmers again, I think is ultimately the one of the big takeaways that I would like to bring home.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point.
The other phrase that's emerged in all this that has been technological sovereignty, and we've talked about that, and what occurred, I think, in the last discussions we've had about this is that when it comes to technological sovereignty and the four freedoms and this particular approach to information and the freedom of information and its utility, it is again useful to think about how farmers have gone through this arc of sovereignty in their own businesses and their approach to what they do. When people talk about sort of DIY and taking control over your technology, often a response is, "Well, look, you're not gonna grow your own food or make your own clothes." But this is something that actually we have done not too long ago in our own history, and in particular, rural farms maintained a lot of those practices until quite recently, and still do in many places in the world. And so it's a from that technological sovereignty standpoint, it's also just a really rich community to be interacting with in terms of that history and that kind of muscle memory around sovereignty and those kind of reflexes. And so that when there is an impingement on a sense of sovereignty and control, there's a really strong reaction in this particular community because these are vital to their way of life and how they make a living, but also because there's kind of this culture around it.
Yeah, I'd like to also mention just the way that the economy or the way that our current system is structured really does drive farmers towards profit and yield increases at the expense of a lot of the externalities. Like around soil health. So if we're looking at the, if we think about the soil as kind of our bank account, we're drawing from that in order to have higher yields and in order to quote unquote feed the world from the vast swaths of America that are being farmed. But other parts of the world have for many centuries lived just fine on smaller plots of intensively managed family operated farms. And so I went to a talk the other night by a local farmer in a couple towns over from me. His name is Brian O'Hara. Definitely recommend looking up any of his stuff. But yeah, he made this point. And one quote that I want to bring forward from him is that farming benefits much more from a cooperative model than a competitive one, because agriculture is the basis of our entire existence. We all need to eat food. It's not just one industry in our economy. It is the basis of it all. So it is very important that we are mindful of the way that operates and the way that our other industries, financial, side industries to farming are driving that. And so I think we really need to be more mindful of that and do what we can to give more power back to the farmers who are growing our food.
You're here.
So on that note, I think I need to go get my daughter from her nap. Hopefully this was informative to everyone, and it wasn't just us rambling too much, which it obviously was, but hope you enjoyed, and if you have questions, put them in the chat. We'll hopefully we'll be around to answer them. Thank you, Libre.
Yeah, we're
Planet.
Sorry to miss you, Libre Planet. In person, we'll be hanging out post pandemic, I'm sure.
Yeah,
thanks for your time, everyone.
Yeah, stay safe, stay healthy.
Yep.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye.